When the 2016 election results rolled in, a new chapter in American legal resistance began. As chants of "lock her up" echoed through campaign rallies, women across the legal profession recognized the dangerous weaponization of law against women and minorities. Rather than surrender to despair, they rose in unprecedented numbers to defend constitutional principles. These weren't just any women. They were seasoned attorneys, judges, and activists who understood the dual nature of American law, its power to protect and its capacity to oppress. Their resistance draws from a rich lineage, including pioneers like Polly Murray, whose groundbreaking legal theories laid foundations for landmark civil rights decisions despite facing triple barriers of racism, sexism, and homophobia. Today, as the Supreme Court shifts dramatically rightward, these modern legal warriors continue fighting with renewed urgency, reminding us that Lady Justice may be blindfolded, but her voice grows stronger through their advocacy. When Sally Yates refused to defend Trump's Muslim ban in January 2017, she became the first official to say no to an administration testing constitutional boundaries. "I looked at this EO, I thought about it, I read the law, I reread the law, and I believe that it was unconstitutional," she explained after her immediate dismissal as acting attorney general. What drove this career Justice Department lawyer to sacrifice her position? Perhaps it was her grandmother's legacy, a woman who secretly studied law despite being relegated to secretarial work, or her formative experiences winning significant pro bono cases. Throughout her career, Yates had built a reputation for nonpartisan professionalism, reforming sentencing guidelines, and reducing over-incarceration. When Senator Cruz later tried cornering her about constitutional authority, she responded with characteristic precision. "I was not convinced that the defense of the executive order was consistent with my responsibilities." What makes her stand remarkable wasn't partisan motivation, but principled conviction. In an era when loyalty to power often trumps loyalty to principle, Yates reminded young lawyers everywhere that their ultimate duty is to the law itself. "Sir, where is your son?" The question, posed to an Iraqi interpreter who had served alongside American troops, captured the chaos unfolding at airports nationwide following the Muslim ban. Travelers with valid documents found themselves detained, their papers confiscated, facing immediate deportation. Into this maelstrom stepped Becca Heller and her International Refugee Assistance Project team. "We had no idea it would apply to people already in transit," she recalled. "People with valid documents were being stopped at the border. It was unprecedented." Within hours, they filed emergency habeas corpus petitions, the ancient legal principle requiring authorities to present detained individuals before a judge. What happened next was extraordinary. Lawyers across America flocked to airports, creating impromptu legal clinics in terminal buildings. Thousands volunteered, many sitting cross-legged on floors with laptops balanced on knees, drafting emergency motions. A spontaneous constitutional flash mob, one volunteer called it. Outside, massive crowds chanted, "Let them in," as ordinary citizens joined what became both legal battle and public demonstration of values. "I never thought I'd be drafting habeas petitions in an airport food court," remarked one attorney, "but when the government violates constitutional rights this flagrantly, you don't ask where your office is, you just get to work." The 2017 Charlottesville white nationalist rally, marked by violent demonstrations and Heather Heyer's death, prompted attorney Robbie Kaplan to take legal action. Using the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871, she targeted rally organizers for conspiring to commit racially motivated violence. Despite facing anti-Semitic harassment and defendants' attempts to destroy evidence, Kaplan persisted, arguing that the First Amendment doesn't protect violent conspiracies. In another pivotal case, ACLU attorney Brigitte Amiri defended an undocumented minor's right to abortion while in federal custody. When Office of Refugee Resettlement Director Scott Lloyd blocked the procedure and personally intervened, Amiri argued that undocumented minors retain constitutional rights, including those established in Roe v. Wade. The case revealed disturbing oversight practices, including Lloyd's tracking of pregnant minors' menstrual cycles in custody. How do you change a system while working both within and outside its structures? This question defines Vinita Gupta's career, from exposing the Tulia, Texas drug enforcement scandal to leading the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. Legal victories alone don't create lasting change, Gupta emphasizes. You need organizing, coalition building, and public education alongside litigation. As the daughter of Indian immigrants, Gupta's outsider perspective, combined with insider legal knowledge, gives her unique insight into addressing systemic inequities. Her inside-outside strategy works with institutions when possible, while maintaining pressure through organized communities when necessary. The most effective advocacy happens when those most affected by injustice lead the fight, she explains. Lawyers can provide tools and expertise, but the vision must come from communities themselves. This approach represents an evolution in civil rights work, moving from lawyer-centered strategies to community-empowered movements that build lasting power among those traditionally excluded. After losing Georgia's 2018 gubernatorial race amid voter suppression concerns, Stacey Abrams launched Fair Fight and the New Georgia Project to expand voter access. Her systematic approach to voter registration, particularly in communities of color, helped register over 800,000 new Georgia voters between 2018 and 2020, contributing to Democratic victories in both presidential and Senate races. At the same time, Nina Perales of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund tackled discriminatory redistricting affecting Latino communities. Through strategic litigation, using the Voting Rights Act and Constitution, she successfully fought for districts where Latino voters could effectively elect their chosen candidates. Together, these leaders exemplify how mass mobilization and legal action can protect voting rights in the post-Shelby County era. The women profiled in this journey represent different facets of a remarkable legal resistance, from government service to grassroots organizing, from litigation to voter mobilization. They have deployed diverse strategies to protect constitutional values during a period of profound challenge. Their stories reveal several important truths. The legal system remains both battleground and bulwark, capable of enabling injustice, but also providing tools to combat it. Women's leadership has been central to defending democratic norms, and the most effective advocacy combines professional expertise with deep connection to affected communities. What unites these legal warriors isn't ideology, but methodology, a commitment to using legal tools strategically and creatively to advance justice. The challenges continue evolving as Supreme Court decisions erode protections for voting rights and reproductive freedom, state legislatures enact new restrictions on civic participation, and the legal profession itself struggles with diversity and harassment issues. Yet these women's work offers a template for moving forward, combining rigorous legal advocacy with broader movement building. As Ruth Bader Ginsburg observed, real change, enduring change, happens one step at a time. The women leading today's legal resistance understand this principle deeply, reshaping American law and democracy for generations to come.